The program is for locals only with Gary Hamada. Let's join Gary and his guests.
Well, we all look forward to this segment every week on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio because it is the Jazz Cat segment, and we are going to go live with the Jazz Cat in a moment. He is Leroy Downs, and if you want more of the interviews that he's conducted on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio, you can go to his website, very, very active website, www.thejazzcat.net. Just remember, it's thejazzcat.net. And you'll get all the interviews that he's had on KRML, including people like Kenny Werner, Diane Reeves, Dee Dee Bridgewater, Prince Lachey, Eric Person, Russell Malone, Thelonious Monk Jr. The list goes on. And today, he comes in again with another stellar performer. And I'll let Leroy the Jazz Cat Downs introduce his guest today. How you doing, Leroy?
Very well, Gary. How are you?
Nice to hear your voice. And again, one of my favorite musicians.
Well, you know, we strive for the best when we do this show, man. And, on with me today on Live with the Jazz Cat, composer, Grammy winner, and one cool alto player, Mr. Gary Barnes.
Hi, how you doing, Leroy? How you doing, Gary?
What's going on, Gary? How you doing?
I'm okay.
I love that name, Gary, all of a sudden. Yeah.
I like your name, too.
I've seen you play here, and not to steal anything, but your Leroy's Thunder, but let me tell you, when you were here with Rosanna Vitro, you were just amazing, just terrific.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was fun.
Sorry, Leroy.
No, man. Hey, man, it's all jazz love.
You know, hey, Gary Bartz, George Fuller here. I wanted to bring something to your attention. Did you know that was the longest performance by any one single performer that was held at the Jazz and Blues Company? Rosanna Vitro, being full of and vinegar, walked in the door, and it must have been, 1:30 by the time she said, okay, I'm hungry, who's going to feed me?
Yeah,
but that was the longest performance by any one single performer.
Wow.
We've had probably 10 tets, you know, nonets, octets, 10 tets in this place that have gone, you know, pretty late, but one single performer, she just was full of energy.
Yeah, well, she's always full of energy.
All right, all the way back to you, Jazz Cat.
Well, Gary, I was going to ask you, you know, where's the coolest jazz hang in New York? I mean, is there a place that exists, like back in the day, where the musicians' creative energy was just flowing and was the place to be?
Well, you know, it's funny because when I first came to New York, the place to be was actually a daytime hang, was a club located, I think it was on 50th, I think it's moved now. But it was called Beefsteak Charlie's.
Oh.
And it was a bar where the musicians would meet, and it was like a hang. Like I would see on one side of the bar would be Roy Eldridge, Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, Tad Dameron, Billy Strayhorn, and on the other side would be the young musicians, myself, John Hicks, and whoever else, you know, happened to be there. And that was the place to go during the day. You get gigs. We left. I remember my first trip to California with the Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. That's where we left from. You know, you would say, well, okay, we're leaving from Beefsteak Charlie's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so we'd be there with our suitcases, you know. So that was a hang. Then, I mean, there's been many hangs. It's loft. There's been a lot of people's lofts. I remember Keanu Sawadi had a loft for a long time, and that's where the musicians would hang. Bradley's, of course,
right
in the 90s. And right now, I'm not sure. There are a couple of hangs. Smoke is a hang. Dizzy's is a hang. The Blue Note. Birdland is a bit of a hang. But the clubs don't stay open as long as they used to.
Right. I mean,
they, like Bradley's would be open. Yeah, they're supposed to close at 4. We might get out of there like 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, but I mean, they'd lock the doors, of course, and put the gates down, and we'd still be in there partying.
Oh, that's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
That's nice. Listen, you know, what kind of arsenal What kind of arsenal do you build up by playing with?
I don't want to talk about war.
No. This is your weapons.
Yeah, you're talking about arsenals.
Your arsenal that you build up with playing with Blakey and Miles and Mingus and Tyner. I mean, you have to just have so much experience by playing with those cats, and just what have you learned? I mean, what have those cats given you along the way?
Oh, each one has given me many things. I wouldn't even know where to start. But each time you work with a great musician, you learn something,
right?
Because you learn what it is that makes them unique, you know, and then you can add something else, like you say, to your repertoire.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, starting out with, you know, Max and Abby is a political statement in and of itself. Does expressing your music and your ideas and your music still have the same global impact as it did back in the 60s?
Well, yeah, I haven't changed. As a matter of fact, I'm working on a two-troop record now, which might be more powerful than the other ones, because it seems like we haven't gotten any further than the 60s, because, well, you know, I had an anti-war song, Uhuru Sasa, which I'm recycling, and they have a new arrangement, new version of it, along with a couple of other anti-war songs. But I don't know where we're going as human beings. I don't know where we're going, because we seem like we like to kill people. You know, we like to teach our young people how to kill, you know, and kill foreigners. But then it spills over into killing each other. So I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going on. But at any rate, there's still a need to address that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, N2 actually means unity, if I am if I'm correct. And you formed a number of collectives with your musicians. Some of the names, like Sphere, I know there are a few others that formed.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, well, N2 Troop was actually the whole idea behind that was I used to see my parents. When they would go to Atlantic City and come back, you know, they'd go there for a weekend or a week, and they'd come back and they'd have these little, I don't even know what you call it. It looked like drumsticks with a big head on it, like a, you know, like a batting ball.
Right.
Well, it would be about that size. And so I would say, well, what the heck is this? And they say, well, they were souvenirs when they would go to, like, the Club Harlem or somewhere like that in Atlantic City and see the show. They were given, all of the people at the tables were given, and they could, you know, beat rhythm on the tables. So I said, that's a good idea. So I started asking people that come to the concerts to bring their rhythm instruments, you know, whether it was tambourines or whatever, you know. So they started that. So the N2 Troop was actually everybody. It wasn't just the band. It was whoever listened to the music. They were part of the troop.
Well, the audience generally acts as part of the band anyway, so that's just a direct feedback.
Right, right.
Beautiful.
Yes.
You're listening to Leroy Downs on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. With me today, I have Mr. Gary Bartz. Hey, when you started your own label called OYO, right?
OYO.
And OYO, and that stands for?
It stands for a couple of things. It's a tribe in Nigeria, but it also stands for Own Your Own.
Yeah, well, that's pretty important in terms of the music and the music business, especially back in the day and on into today.
Yeah, well, most musicians don't own their music, and that's a sin, and that's why music is in the state it is today, because we've written all of these great songs, we've made all these great records, but corporations own it.
Right.
And they don't even care about the music, so the music is in the hands of people who could care less. And that's really not a good thing. You wonder why the music isn't as prosperous or as heard as much. But that's because it's not supposed to be heard, according to the people that own it.
Right.
So, you know,
are you the only one on your label, or do you have other cats?
Oh yeah, no, I'm the only one on my label. I don't need extra paperwork. I would encourage anybody, you know, who's start their own record label. It's too easy nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't do that, I'll tell you a funny story. I don't know how much time we have, but yes, this is something that really shows you how out of the loop we as musicians are, and it has nothing to do with race. It doesn't have anything to do with what you call the music. But I heard an interview with John Denver before he died, and they were asking him, well, Mr. Denver, what are your plans? What would you like to do in the future? And he actually said, well, I have written all these new songs, and I'd like to record them, but no record label. I don't have a deal. Now, this is a man who's buying experimental airplanes. He's got enough money to buy an experimental airplane, and he can't think as far as, well, I'll start my own record label.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a pretty simple concept.
Yeah, but it's not, because we've been brainwashed into thinking we can't do this without a record label.
No, we can.
Of course we know we can, you know, but it's a fearful thing to a lot of people. A lot of musicians will probably never do that, because they're afraid. They are actually afraid.
Either afraid, or they just want to concentrate on their art and don't feel like doing anything with the business, but you got
to
survive.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could hire somebody to do something for the business. That's not the thing is to own the master.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that? I can't think of his name right now from Public Enemy.
Chuck D.
Chuck made this statement. I love this. He says, if you don't own the master owns you. You know, and for those of you in Radioland who don't know what a master is the tape that recordings come from. That's the original tape. That's the master. That's the most valuable thing other than the publishing rights. And record labels own, I would say, out of all recordings in the Western Hemisphere, corporations probably own 95% of it.
That's incredible.
And it may be even more. I may be giving musicians a little more credit, but it's really crazy. I mean, Miles doesn't own his masters. Most people, Max owns some. Coltrane started owning them near the end of his. You know.
Well, I spoke with Prince Lachey
long
ago. The Prince,
my buddy.
Yeah, man. You know, we were driving around in the car up in Oakland, and he's playing all of these CDs. He's playing with Herbie.
Uh-huh.
He's playing with Woody Shaw.
Yeah.
He never gave his music up. He kept it, so he has his own masters.
Oh, a lot of guys do, yeah. No, I mean, a lot of guys do, but I'm just saying, most musicians don't. Most of them don't. And it's a big thing, and we don't have enough time to even go into that. But that's a big reason why this music is not heard as much as it should be.
Stuff all in the vault.
Well, no, because we don't own it. You know, I'll have people email me and they'll say, oh, I love this album, man. Why don't you put this out again? And I'll say, I don't own it. If I owned it, it would never have not been out.
Right.
You know, if I own the master, I'm going to keep those records out all the time. And so, but I don't own them. So that now, I figure the last century, that was the corporation century. This century, this is the musician century.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man, speaking of musicians, we just lost a beautiful player, man. Wonderful cat that I know you know and recorded with.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the blessings that you would have to share about Jackie Mac?
Oh, man, there's so many. You know, I know at the wake I told a couple of stories. You know, everybody was telling stories because he was such a loving, kind, giving person, not afraid to share his knowledge with any young musician. I met him when I was about 18 or 19, and he kind of took me under his wing, as he did many young musicians. And I'm not that much younger. I always thought he was much older than me, you know, but he was only 8 years older. So we were within a generation of each other. But he had been out there way early. Well, I guess he was out there when he was 18, too. Started recording with Miles when he was 19.
Miles, just a loving cat, man.
Yeah, really. Really, he'd be a spirit.
You guys did an album together called The Super?
Or? Ode to Super. Actually, we did two albums. We did one called Altissimo with Charlie Mariano and Lee Konigs, Jackie and myself. And we had so much fun on that Jackie said, well, let's, you know, you're going to be in Denmark, I'm going to be there, let's do an album there. So that within the month, we did two albums.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a blessing. You're listening to Leroy Downs on Live with the Jazz Cat on KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio. I've got with me today the master musician, Mr. Gary Bartz. Now, I know that, you know, Parker and Train, you were influenced by, but what in particular drew you to them? Was it their tone, their fingering, their approach, their iconic nomenclature, theory?
It's hard to say. I think the alto, I guess I always had an ear for the alto because initially, before I heard Charlie Parker, I heard Louis Jordan. And I loved Louis Jordan. Partly, though, because of his humor, which I particularly liked, and then he played alto, too, you know, so
yeah.
That was good. And then when I heard Bird, that just did it, you know.
That was the one.
Yeah.
One of your tunes I used to play quite often, I had an overnight show here in Los Angeles on KLON, K-Jazz, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm never sure if I pronounced it correctly, but it was Perium.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, that's the one, man. I love that one.
Perihelion and aphelion.
Yeah, okay, well, I'm sorry that I butchered it for so many years, but I did play it, man. I was burning that one like crazy.
Oh, thank you.
You've recorded so many wonderful albums on your own, and you've contributed to the music of so many others as well. If you can get the cats together and put a dream team recording together, who would you have?
Well, actually, I'm kind of in the process of doing that for this new True True project I'm working on now. So it depends on who's available when it comes time to do it.
Sure.
Yeah. So I mean, so many guys. I don't know. I'm trying to get. And I haven't talked to him, so maybe I shouldn't even mention names.
Yeah, okay, all right, we won't go there with that.
But it should look for a cast of thousands.
Now, you're a professor of music and jazz studies division at the Oberlin Conservatory of Music.
Yeah.
How would you lecture your jazz students on the intricacies of electricity and its effect on jazz?
Well, see, and that's a thing that I had to go through. When I joined Miles Davis, I was totally acoustic.
Right.
And he was totally electric at that time, playing with a wah-wah pedal, and Keith Jarrett was playing the Wurlitzer electric pianos and all of that. So I had to get used to that. But once I got used to it and really reflected on it, I mean, electricity is something that we don't even know what it is, where it comes from. We are electric. As human beings, there's electricity that runs through us some kind of way, you know, which is life.
Right.
I don't have a problem with electricity. We use microphones. If you're using a microphone, that's electric. Sound is sound. The only problem is that acoustic instruments do give you overtones,
right,
which is a part of nature. A lot of synthetic or electronic instruments don't really give you the overtones because it's more man-made in that respect. But electricity is not a man-made thing. Electricity comes from the same place that we come from, so... I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, is that more or less like digital versus an analog tape?
Right.
And recording?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything is moving to digital. It's a lot easier. It's made, like I say, it's made recording much easier. I can record in my house now, so with the equipment that you have. I can mix in the house. I can send tracks across the world for someone to lay a track on, or I could they can send one to me. I can lay a track. So it's a whole different world today.
It's beautiful, man.
Yeah, I think it is.
Now, are you on tour on the West Coast, or do you have one gig coming up at a place called Bach Dynamite and Dancing? That's in Half Moon Bay.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm just going out to do that on Easter Sunday.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's coming up.
Yeah, that's this Sunday. Yeah.
Well, if you got the information on Bach Dynamite and Dancing, you can give it to everybody so they can come out there and check you out.
Well, it's in outside of San Francisco, and it, like you said, it in Half Moon Bay, which is a very beautiful part of the world. I really love it down there. It's, and the club is situated right on the water. They have good food and good music all the time. I actually did a recording there with Roy Hargrove. What's the name of that album? The one where we.
Tenders of Our Time? No.
What, say it again?
It wasn't Tenders of Our Time, was it?
No, No, this was the one, because it was a live date, but you didn't hear the audience so much. We did My Shining Hour on
that album. Oh, nice tune, yeah.
Yeah. I can't think of the name. Kendrick Soul, I think it was of Kendrick
Soul.
Oh,
yeah. Spirits, the Spirits, the Kindred Spirits.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
But we recorded at this, you know, particular club, the Bach Dynamite Dancing Society. And it's just a beautiful place. Greg Bandy, who is my regular drummer, is going to be with me. And David Certain called me to, you know, see if I would come out there and do a thing with him. And so I'm going to go out there. We're going to play some of his music and some of my music. And we should have a good time on Easter.
I bet you should, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, man.
Oh.
Gary Bartz on Jazz and Blues Radio, live with the Jazz Cat. You don't happen to have a horn anywhere near you, do you?
I just put them away.
Oh.
But look, I also would like to, I do have two new CDs that will be available. They are available on the internet right now, www.garybartz.com. One is Soprano Stories. Which is all soprano album, something I've been trying to do for many, many years in record labels. See, you can't do things, you can't do anything you want to do if the record label that you're with doesn't really understand what your music is about and what you are about. And that's a big problem with this music.
Understood.
So that's why we need to take charge of album. We don't even own our own music. That's crazy. You know, it's great music, and we don't own it, you know.
There's lots of beautiful music, man, and I hope it just continues to be available for us, because it is out there.
It's out there. And so that's one album. The other one is Volume 2 of At the Jazz Standard. This one is called My Velia, which is a Cesaria Evora tune that I found. I listen to all kinds of music and love all kinds of music. And now that I'm no longer... or what I call on the plantation, because I record labels is just like plantations.
Yeah,
you know, there's three types of musicians. You got house musicians, field musicians, and you got free musicians.
Right.
And I'd been a field musician for many years, but I'm finally off the plantation.
Oh, beautiful.
And it's funny because the house musicians always are they're the most successful musicians in this world. And that's because they give up the most. They'll give up their publishing. They'll play anything the record label wants them to play. They'll do a tribute to whoever, you know, even though you might have another agenda. You may be working on something that you've been working on for years and trying to get that out, but they don't see that. It's a long story.
Well, that's kind of hard, because now you're telling an artist, hey, you have a canvas in front of you, and I see that you're using the reds,
mm-hmm.
the blues, and the greens. But you know, here's a little bit of black.
Yeah.
Put some black in it.
Put some purple on it. I don't like all of that. Those colors. Yeah, that's in essence what happens.
Yeah.
And I've always refused. You know, that's why I call myself a field musician, even though I was working in the house.
Right.
you know, because a lot of times, you know, that's what you have to do. But I still didn't bend all the way over.
Well, look, man, we love your music, and we're happy to have you here with us today in Carmel. And thanks so much for talking with us, Gary.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Leroy.
Thank you, Leroy. This is Gary Mata here on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. Hope you enjoyed that special interview with Leroy the Jazz Cat Downs, live with the Jazz Cat as his segment. And today his guest is Gary Bartz, the great saxophonist. And I hope you all enjoyed that. If you want more information, or if you want a replay, or any of the other replays of the interviews that Leroy the Downs has conducted on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio, you can all just go right to his website, and that is www.thejazzcat.net, and you should be able to just pick it up and listen to it, and I don't know, you might even be able to talk to the Jazz Cat himself if he's around. Thank you, Leroy.
Hey, you're welcome, Gary. Thank you.
And thank you, Gary.
Thank you very
much.
Yeah,
thank you. Hey, Gary Bartz, George Fuller here. Just one more thing I wanted to add. I remember there was a saying in the 70s, everybody was running around saying, we want musicians, not electricians. But then again, I also found out from my own experience in working in jazz radio for now 23 years that fusion did not necessarily have to be electric to be fusion, and the group Steps Ahead is a good example of that. I notice Everybody on there is an acoustic player.
Yeah.
So, and they swing. They swing at that. So there is in fact a formula to that makes it work.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Fusion has nothing to do with electricity.
No.
Even though I guess it became known, or it became aligned with that. But fusion just means mixing of different types of music.
Yeah. So we thank you very much again.
Oh, thank you.
For this conversation, this opportunity, and back to Gary Hamada here.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Leroy, and thank you, Gary Bartz.
You're welcome, my pleasure.
And we'll be right back with more from our Tuesday edition of For Locals Only. It's April 11, 2006. You're listening to us from the Eastwood Building, Carmel-by-the-Sea, California.